Speakeasy.
Words.
Lingo.
Speakeasy.
Language.
Speakeasy on ABC Radio Perth.
And stepping us through Speakeasy on a Thursday morning is linguist Daniel Midgley, who is also the host of the podcast Talk the Talk. And he joins us to talk about language every Thursday. But Daniel, before we get on talking about language, you're also going to be talking to Jeff on Drive today.
I am. Apparently it's going to be something about cars.
Yeah, so I joined Jeff for a drive in a car last week.
Did you?
And he did the driving, and he's a good driver. You'll be fine. You'll be fine.
Can he talk and drive at the same time? This is what I'm worried about.
Well, he managed. He managed to do both, and unlike me, he doesn't get distracted while he's behind the wheel. So so that will be on this afternoon, so we'll look forward to hearing, finding out more about Daniel and whether or not he's a petrol head, whether or not he knows how to fang it and chuck a donut.
Fang it?
Yeah, fang it. That's a driving term.
I'm looking that one up in Urban Dictionary. Okay.
And that's exactly what... Oh, nice little move into Urban Dictionary, Daniel Midgley. We'll be
fang.
Talking about Urban Dictionary and how these online crowdsource dictionaries are just staying one step ahead of our usual sources of word information. But before we get there, Daniel, we've been... Peter was talking about how he has trouble saying the word eyebrows this morning, and we had Vicky get in touch, and she says that she has trouble saying the word brewery. And now Richard says, my word is ask. It comes out ux. Don't ask me why. Ah, see what he said? Don't ask me why.
I saw what you did there.
that's from Richard. Is it common? Do you have a word that you struggle with pronouncing?
I always have trouble with rural.
Yes.
It's the old Tom Brokaw thing. So rural and brewery are both, you know what's going on here, right?
What's going on?
There's lots of R's.
Ah.
If there's a chance to drop a few R's, we just drop it. For example, do you really say the R in surprise? Do you?
No.
I don't either. How about berserk?
No.
Okay. Or even caterpillar or entrepreneur, even interpretation, or prerogative. These are words that we'll just drop them out if there's more than one, because more than one R is kind of hard to say, especially if you are a rural juror.
It's perfectly fine if you're a pirate.
Did you have to take any training for pronunciation? What did you have to do?
I just mispronounce things and annoy people.
The
R's are tricky because when it comes to English language words, I struggle with that place where you make beer, the brewery. I struggle with that one. I struggle with rural. I struggle with rural report because you got another R word after that. Yep. But when you come to saying the R, saying that's R sound in other languages. Mm. So say if you say it, in an Indian word, you roll it and it comes out a lot more easily than if you're saying it in English.
In Spanish, you've got the, normal... It's got a tap, I can't think of it now, but there's two R's. There's a tap and then there's a roll. And can you roll your R's?
Roll your R's.
Oh, yes. Ferrocarril. Wonderful. Peter, you can't say eyebrows. What's up?
No, I just struggle to enunciate it properly. So if I could say it, I really concentrate eyebrow, but you can tell how much effort went into that.
The focus.
I'll try not to exaggerate, but now I'll probably say it perfectly. Eyebrow, it was wrong.
On your mind,
was,
right?
Was that wrong?
It was a little bit wrong.
Eyebrow.
If I have to say it very quickly in succession. I really struggle with it.
I'm having trouble with that now as well.
It's contagious.
It's linguistics madness.
And George W. used to have problems with nuclear. But even saying nuclear, I have to think of it as two words.
It's not actually a problem. I was no fan of George W. Bush. And when he said nuclear, it kind of annoyed me a little bit. Despite all my best, cool linguist training. But hey, that's a process with a lot of words. There are lots of words where it's flipped like that. Like, look at the word iron. I mean, it's even still spelled iron, but we flipped it and the spelling maintained. So, and if you don't like nuclear, that's fine. Then say iron. Don't say iron. And don't say bird and horse either, because those were once brid and hross.
Oh.
And we flipped it. So this is a process called metathesis. It's totally normal. And this is the one also, Richard, this is where your axe comes in instead of ask. Now, if you don't like axe, don't say it. But it used to be 400 or 500 years ago, that was a normal way of pronouncing it.
Oh.
Ask and axe grew up side by side. We can even see documents that say axion.
So Richard's talking about that tendency for some people, they even say arxed.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's this rule, and I've said this before, when you peeve on a bit of language, look at who says it, because that's a guide, you know, for many of us, you know, black folks, urban blacks. Our linguistic prejudice is often masking a thinly veiled... This is not a comment at you, Richard, but this is a thinly veiled race thing.
Yeah.
Right.
We got to watch out for that stuff, yes, because linguistic prejudice is often seen as an acceptable way to smuggle in other kinds of prejudice.
Mm.
So watch out for that. That stuff is so toxic.
Good point. We're talking with Daniel Midgley. He's a linguist and hostcast. See what I did
That's
there?
Good. I like that.
Host of the podcast, Talk the Talk, and he joins us for Speakeasy. And we're actually going to talk about Urban Dictionary in a moment, but there's been quite a few people who have got in touch to say, to tell us the words that they have trouble saying. Phil from Mandra says, why do so many people have trouble saying sixth, as in the thing that is number six, with the word coming out as sick, as in I don't feel well?
Yeah.
You can hear it a lot in sports commentary.
I can answer that with, because I struggle with that also.
Yes.
And I have a large tongue, and even as, no, it's part of it. And as a child, I had a little bit of a lisp as well. So I have to really concentrate on being able to actually say sixth.
Yeah.
Again, it's because of that, Phil's exactly right. You, as a broadcaster, you really have to concentrate on these things, or at least I do, Paul.
Yeah, absolutely. And Gary says, what about all the journalists who pronounce nuclear as new colour? That might be me. I think I just did that. In light of recent happenings on the Korean Peninsula, all the talk is about denuclearization. Gary.
Once again, that's the nuclear thing. It's the metathesis thing again. So I feel like I've already covered that.
Yeah.
Sixth is really difficult because you've got three really, really chunky sounds in a row, right? You've got a k, which is in the back of your throat. Then you've got a s. Right? That's the S in six, which takes you back to the front of your mouth again. And then you've got to go all the way to the front with a th. And th is really challenging. In fact, not a lot of languages have a th. So you've got three really, really crunchy sort of phonemes right there in a row. And in fact, this is one of my favorite tongue twisters. Guinness had it for a while as the toughest tongue twister of all. I think it's even tougher than Irish wristwatch. But the tongue twister is the sixth sick sheik's sixth sheep's sick.
Oh.
Not even going to attempt that.
Come on.
One more time, please, Daniel.
You are cruel.
The sixth sheik's sixth sheep's sick. Man, that is tough.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we have also a few other comments here. Somebody mentions, what about February?
Yes.
February. Do you say February or February?
I'm a February kind of person. That's just how I roll.
Once again, we drop out the second R if we need to. Bit of history, though. It seems that original R wasn't even there. Back in the Middle Ages, it came from Old French. It was fiovrel. But then people looked at that and said, you know what? This would be really cool if it were more like Latin februarius. And so they stuck an extra R in. And people doing this drive me crazy, because that's why we have so many, that's why we have a B in debt and doubt.
Mm.
It didn't have one originally when it came from French, but then people said, let's give it a Latin B. That's why island has an S, so that it would look like Latin insula. But it didn't need to be there, but people just thought Latin was the coolest language, so... So now we're stuck with all these rotten letters.
Oh, man. Brian, just quickly, Brian says he has trouble with parallel. Don't start me on parallelogram, Brian.
Parallelogram.
Yes, and Paul has trouble with phenomenon. Every time we say a word like that, we can't resist. We have to go...
With what?
Do.
Ah, you did a thing. I was going to do that. That was phenomenon. Parallel's interesting because it's got two sounds that are very close, the er and the ul. And these sounds are so similar that in many languages they don't distinguish them at all. They just skip them and have kind of a r sound. So your mouth has to go from er to ul parallel, and then parallelogram has that extra r. So this is why. We're not even going to get to the dictionary.
No, look, let's get to that now. You're on Speakeasy with Daniel Midgley. He's a linguist and host of Talk the Talk. So firstly, we're talking about Urban Dictionary. Tell us what it is, Daniel.
Urban Dictionary is a crowdsourced dictionary of mostly slang terms. There's a lot of junk, but there's actually a lot of really, really useful stuff in there. And I use Urban Dictionary all the time. In fact, I've been taking a deep dive into it lately because I'm preparing for a Talk the Talk live show that we're doing on May 16th at the Boston. And so I'm just plowing into Urban Dictionary, trying to find out all I can about words. A lot of information there.
How is it different to other dictionaries? And is it fair to say that in some ways it is well and truly ahead of the curve?
It really is. I mean, because it's crowdsourced, all right, there's a lot of junk, but there is, like I say, a lot of good stuff. For most dictionaries, they insist on having a really solid track record for a word in print and, if possible, in spoken dialogue. However, I noticed that Oxford dictionaries, they're making sure that they use Twitter now as well. That can be evidence for words. But Oxford is really careful about including stuff because, you know, once something gets into Oxford, it never gets out. Mm. It is a dictionary of record. They want to make sure that 400 years from now, if you run across a word, it's in there. So they are really slow. Let me give you an example. Have you ever heard of somebody being referred to as thirsty?
Ah, yes.
What does it mean?
It means maybe I should look up my Urban Dictionary before I put myself out there on this and, shatter any illusion that I might have any credibility. But
that's why is it
kind of a sexual thing?
Can be.
Yeah?
Somebody who's a little too eager. Now, I've noticed that there was a sexual meaning early on. That was how I first heard it. But lately, I've heard it change a little bit. So people who are too eager for attention are thirsty, like on their Instagram account. So I went over to Urban Dictionary and I found that there was an entry for this way back in 2003. People have been saying this since 2003, and I just heard about it like last month. That's how uncool I am. All right. Now, let's just take a look at, by contrast, you know, OMG and LOL? People have been doing that forever. Oxford Online Dictionary only got an entry for OMG and LOL in 2012. That's how uncool Oxford is. So they are really, really slow because they work really carefully and they want to make sure that they get it right. Urban Dictionary, forget it.
Careful's not cool.
They'll just throw everything in. And the other interesting thing is their user base. About 80% of their monthly visitors are under 25.
Okay.
So you are getting information from the white-hot core of lexical creation.
And I used to have moments in my life where there were young, cool people that I'd talk to on a daily basis, and they're the people that would tell you these things and use these words. So you'd get to pick up on it, and you'd get to hear about it. And they're not in my life anymore because I'm trying to be a grown-up, and I miss them. But they used to tell me these things, and now I have to go to Urban Dictionary.
You know, I sometimes am asked to talk for high schoolers, which is a lot of fun because they're really interested in issues of linguistic prejudice and social justice and things like that. And whenever I go to a high school group, I always shake them down for new vocabulary. I'm like, all right, you guys.
What are you saying? give me cool. Make me cool. Come on.
This is Speakeasy with Daniel Midgley, and John's got an anecdote to share. Good morning, John.
Yeah, hi, Pete. I was just listening to your guest and talking about a lot of the sounds being at the front of the mouth. Yep. And there's a lovely quote in a book by Two Worlds by Dame Anne Salmon, who recorded that when Captain James Cook, arrived in New Zealand, a Maori woman was recorded as saying, "I remember when the goblins from the sea came," and they called them the goblins from the sea because they had eyes in the back of their heads because they had sat the wrong way around in the rowing boats. "But I remember when the goblins from the sea came, and they came ashore, and one was taller than the rest, and he spoke with a hissing sound," which of course would be English because the English language is so much at the front of the mouth rather than the back.
Great story.
That is really interesting. That's fantastic.
Thank you, John. Appreciate that story. Just on the Oxford English Dictionary, how do they approach, we'll use Australianisms, Daniel, for example? I mean, when do they decide that, let's use budgie smugglers as an example. We all know what budgie smugglers are, but is that going to feature in the Oxford Dictionary?
Well, it might not feature in the Oxford Dictionary proper until it gets picked up more widely. And they do have Australianisms. For example, selfie, that's an Australianism, and that one has been rampaging through both the stuffy old Oxford Dictionary, but also Oxford Dictionaries Online, which is kind of their quick response feeder dictionary. But yeah, you can have an expression like that, but it would be probably tagged as Australian.
And so, I mean, there's been some research that's been done into Urban Dictionary, and you know, and one of the aspects of that is, you know, the nature of the descriptions of these words, and what, some of them, because you need to filter out. There's a lot of bad stuff in there as well, isn't there?
There's a lot of junk, but one thing that keeps the good stuff floating at the top is the upvote system. You can upvote and you can downvote stuff. For example, oh, and I'm referring to some research by Dong Nguyen, Barbara McGilvery, and Taha Yasseri from the Alan Turing Institute in the UK. They found that out of the millions of words that your Urban Dictionary has, a lot of them have more than one sense. So about 1,200 definitions exist for emo, about 1,100 for love, and 600 for chode, which I can't tell you what it is. You'll just have to look it up on Urban Dictionary. But people upvote and downvote these, and the ones that have the most upvotes go to the top.
Daniel Midgley, you're very much throwing us all this morning. I will never be able to use the word thirsty the same way again. I'm not sure what I'm going to do. Maybe I'm going to say I'm parched. Is that what I'm going to say?
I don't know. You better check Urban Dictionary and see if there's anything for that.
Thanks so much for coming in. Daniel Midgley, linguist and host of the podcast Talk the Talk.